morning, Your Honor.
Let's wait till the courtroom clears.
Yes.
All right. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. Richard Gardner, appearing for appellants J&G Sales Limited and Foothills Firearms Limited. At the council table with me is Stephen Holbrook, who's co-counsel with me, and James Votes, who is counsel for National Shooting Sports Foundation. Your Honor, just at the beginning, I would say that the arbitrary and capricious argument was one made by Mr. Votes, and as far as I'm going to go, we're going to submit on the brief on that. Unless the court wishes to hear from Mr. Votes, he's present and prepared if the court wishes to hear from him. What I'm going to focus on is the question that what we think is the basic question here, and that is whether ATF has the authority under 18 U.S.C. 923G to require federally licensed firearms dealers to submit information to ATF regarding the sale or other disposition to a non-federal firearms licensee of two or more qualifying rifles, which is basically a semi-automatic rifle that uses a detachable magazine within a period of five consecutive business days. And that argument breaks down to two basic sub-arguments. And the first one is that ATF has not met, or the demand letter has not met, the threshold requirement of 923G5A, which says that the only thing that can be demanded is record information required to be kept by this chapter. And it's conceded by the by the government in this case.
What's the second point? I just want to have them both in my head.
That's yes, sir. The second point is that you have to read 923G5A in context, and if it is read in context, it doesn't grant them the authority, even if you assume that they met the threshold requirement. But the threshold requirement, Your Honor, can resolve the case without having to get to that more, if you will, a little bit more complicated issue.
The Fourth Circuit in Blaustein, the Ninth Circuit, Justice O'Connor, following Blaustein and the Fourth Circuit, have heard precisely these arguments from you.
They have not actually heard the first argument. The first argument was the threshold argument was not made in any of those cases, Your Honor, because in those cases, the records which were being from which record information was being taken was record information that was required, so that issue never was raised.
So you're talking about the reconstitution of data that's already there.
Correct. That's what I refer to as the threshold argument, that there has to be G5A requires that record information be kept by this chapter, and the information that from which these reports are being drawn is not information that's being kept, that is required to be kept by this chapter.
Information that's being kept, your argument is that it's not in the same form.
No, it's more than that. It's information that it is not required to be kept. There's no requirement in the regulations, and we reproduced in the reply brief, Your Honor, at page 8, the firearms acquisition and disposition record format that shows exactly what information is required to be kept. And what is not required to be kept is information concerning the type of action of the firearm. And of course, this...
You mean whether it's a semi-automatic?
Correct. That is not required to be recorded at any place. And the government concedes that. There's no issue about that.
I just want to be clear, though. If I am a licensed dealer and I sell you a semi-automatic,
yes,
don't my records have to show I sold you a semi?
No, they do not. If you look at the chart on page 8, which is an exact reproduction.
So my record means the record I have to keep only says that on a certain date I sold you
a rifle. That would be recorded the manufacturer.
Manufacturer, no model, no nothing.
No, the manufacturer would be recorded.
Yeah.
The model, if there was one, but there's no requirement that firearms have models. That's right in the regulations.
But if there is a model, it's required, right?
If there is a model, it's required, but you can't the model doesn't necessarily tell you whether it's a semi-automatic.
But in a lot of cases, it does.
It might.
But I think that's part of their answer, that information is there. And to the extent that it's not, that's a perfectly viable argument.
Well,
but the information is there in a lot of cases.
Well, I would disagree with you on that, Your Honor.
What are we disagreeing on?
The
model is there, and the model can, from the model, you can discern the type.
Possibly.
Yeah.
In some cases, you might be able to. If you were a knowledgeable licensee, but there's no requirement in the statute that
a licensee... You're suggesting some of these licensees are not knowledgeable.
Well, what I'm saying, yes, they're not knowledgeable necessarily. The person who's doing the record keeping is not necessarily knowledgeable about the types of...
That can't be the argument. The licensee is the licensee.
The licensee is the licensee.
The licensee hires people at a level, you can't go down there and say, well, those people are not knowledgeable. It's the licensee who's responsible.
The licensee, but there's no requirement, Your Honor, that the licensee be knowledgeable, that he has to know that every model means that it is a semi-automatic or a bolt action or whatever.
The question is whether the models give the information that the governor is requesting. I'm not talking about situations where the model does not.
Right.
That's different.
And where there isn't a model to begin with.
Right. That's right. But if the model does, the licensee can be presumed to have that information.
I'm not
talking about the clerk who you're saying, well, this person doesn't know. I'm talking about the licensee.
Right. I understand what you're saying, but I don't think there's nothing in the statute that allows you to presume or allows the presumption that the licensee has knowledge of what a model is, assuming there is a model and assuming that the model reflects the type of firearm and also whether it uses ammunition feeding source that it has. You've got two factors here. One is the type of action and one is the type of ammunition feeding sources. And we've got five different types of actions and four different types of feeding sources. So we've got a tremendous variety of information that the model may or may not reflect. And again, I said there's nothing in the statute that requires the dealer, the licensee, whether it be the owner or the clerk or whoever, to be knowledgeable of what those particular things are.
So if the licensee fills out this form, the model number or maybe even the serial number may provide a way to trace what type of rifle was in fact sold.
Well, the serial number probably wouldn't. The serial number is just a number that's assigned to...
I know, but when I buy an appliance, it has a serial number, and they can tell what make and model it is and that sort of thing.
Possibly.
That's all I meant.
Merely looking at the serial number itself isn't going to tell you anything. It's just a number.
No. What I said is it would give you information from which you could trace. You might have to call the manufacturer and figure out.
Yeah, that's correct.
All right.
You might be able to tell from the serial number. The manufacturer would probably be able to tell what the model was based on the serial number if there was no model.
So just so I'm a little clearer about this, your point is that your clients have looked at the regulations and keep records in that manner, consistent with this form.
That's correct.
And now they will be required either to do tracing themselves through the model or serial number.
Right.
To reconstitute a record.
They're having, well, not reconstitute a record, but create a whole new record. They're having to create a new record where they have to record the type of action and the type of ammunition feeding source.
Is there anything in the record here that shows that model numbers that have, for example, a 5,000 number are semi-automatics?
No. We point out, I believe, in the brief, quite to the contrary, that there's nothing in the record that indicates that there is a model, that the model means can tell you any information. And essentially what ATF is trying to do here is sub silentio amend the regulation, which requires this description information, and add into there two more bits of information. If that was important to be done, of course they can always repromulgate the regulation to add that information, but what they can't do is create a demand on licensees to request information which the regulation is not,
saying this is an arbitrary and capricious argument. It's not that they don't have the authority to do it. You're saying it's arbitrary and
capricious
to produce something that the regulation doesn't require. That's your argument.
Well, I think the second argument is that they also don't have the authority under the statute anyway, saying we don't have to
that's
get...
That's the one you're losing everywhere, but...
Well, no, I'll get to that one,
yeah,
but
I know.
there's significant distinctions between the J&G 1 and this case that I think show that that in this case, those arguments would have traction where they may not have had in the other cases. But I'm saying that you don't have to get to that if you look at the threshold argument and say they can't require this information to begin with, then you don't have enough.
So you're saying your case is really nothing more. I'm sorry, Judge. Your case is really, for you at bottom, your case is just about type of action and feeding sources.
Well, that's the first
argument. If we win that, your arguments, we're done.
That's right. We're done. And now, if ATF thinks that that's important enough, they can go back and repromulgate the regulation and add in those two tidbits of it, those bits of information.
All these other arguments about authority everywhere else in the statute were kind of icing, throw-ins. You're really concerned about being made to.
I wouldn't characterize them.
You're losing them everywhere, and you're trying here, too.
Now, let me go back to the language of the statute, I could. G5A speaks of information contained in the records.
Correct.
Which is somewhat different than saying, give me a copy of your records.
Well, it says all record information required to be kept by this chapter.
Right.
Is the statutory language. And so that when you are being asked to provide information by demand letter, that you're going to look at the record information that you have and simply turn over that information.
I understand, but all I'm saying is, why would it be an unreasonable interpretation of the statute to say information contained in the records, where this form that we have been discussing, the model number would, that is information contained in the records that could tell you whether this is a semi-automatic or not.
Well, the problem with that is as we've been discussing, it could tell you that maybe if there was a model number. So we don't know what universe that we're talking about, and as I said in response to your question, there's nothing in the record indicating whether we're talking about 1% of the universe or 10%, or we just don't know. But what we do know for sure is that you can't tell in every instance, and the only way that a dealer can be sure is he's got to create a whole new record system. And on top of that, not only does he have to create a new record system capturing that information, but he's got to set up a system whereby he can check to see if a similar rifle, a qualifying rifle, was sold to the same person within the last 5 consecutive business days. So he also has to set up some kind of chronological record.
And maybe counsel for the government can tell us, but is this an unusual type of rifle? In other words, if I'm a dealer and I have what I call your everyday firearm, and all I have is the model number, but on the other hand, I have some antiques or I have some very unusual rifles over here, so I know when those are sold.
You might.
So is this particular, the rifles that the government is interested in getting information about, are they of that type?
No, these semi-automatic rifles
there are
probably 100 million of them in the United States, if not more.
And that the fact that I know nothing about guns, all right, so that's why I'm asking you all these questions in terms of, is the fact that it's a .22, does that make it an unusual type of rifle?
Well, it's caliber other than, higher.
Yeah, higher than.
No, it doesn't,
It doesn't distinguish it significantly.
Not much. I mean, you're talking about, as I said, you may be talking about 100 million firearms that are potentially, that fit this definition, that are in existence in the United States.
In other words, if I'm a dealer,
and multiple millions of them being sold.
Right. But if I'm a dealer and I know my clientele, and they want to go out and shoot birds and that kinds of things, but they're not after lions and, big game.
Right.
So that I wouldn't have many of these rifles. Trying to understand.
Your Honor, answer is you would have the definition is so broad, semi-automatic rifle with attachable magazine, you're including rifles above 22, you're including rifles that you would use from target, that could be involved in target practice, that would be involved in shooting varmints, would be involved in shooting wolves, that would be involved in shooting deer, could be involved in shooting bear. I mean, every possible use of a rifle that you can think of would be, these rifles would qualify under, and you're talking about multiple, I know this isn't in the record, but I'm trying to address your question.
No, I appreciate that.
There are multiple millions of them that are being sold by dealers across the United States. So, and as I said, I think the other factor, which I haven't gotten a chance to mention in this argument, and I haven't even gotten to the second argument, but is the fact that you have to keep these records, some kind of record. The dealers who create some kind of record system so that he can check whether that person has purchased a qualifying rifle within the past 5 days. And my client, J&G Sales, for example, is a very large operation. They have lots of people working there, and they couldn't just rely on the memory of a salesman, because it might be a different salesman, because it could be one bought on Monday and one bought on Friday. So they have to create some kind of record system to keep track of all that. And there's nothing in the regulations that requires that. So that's why our threshold argument shows that the government...
Wait a minute. There's nothing that requires what? You've got...
There's nothing that requires the dealer to keep a record of how many days between the sale of qualifying
rifles. Yes, but you've got to report it within 7 days.
You have to report the sale of the second qualifying rifle if one is sold within that 5 business days.
No, I'm not talking about what you're challenging. I'm talking about...
The recording in the acquisition and disposition record?
Yes,
that has to be done within 7 days.
Right.
Which also shows why the regulations show that this can't be done, because you don't have to record it for 7 days, yet the demand letter requires that the reporting form be sent in the close of the business day on which the second rifle is sold. So you can't rely on your acquisition and disposition record to determine whether you previously sold that kind of firearm to that kind of individual, because in 5 days it wouldn't have to be recorded.
Hart, before you sit down,
yes, sir.
The heart of your argument is we're being made by demand to give information that we're not required to keep.
Well,
required
to create information that we're not required to keep. That's our first argument, and I would like to address the second argument, but I guess I'll have to submit
that
on the briefs.
We've read the Fourth and Ninth Circuit on those arguments.
Could I briefly distinguish those? I know I'm way out of time here.
Are you interested in hearing?
A little bit.
All right.
2 minutes, then.
Thank you, Your Honor. The distinction is that in the first case, the RSM case from the Fourth Circuit, those records, that demand letter only went to 41.
What about Blaustein?
Blaustein. Okay. Even more distinction in the Blaustein Wright case and the first J&G case. In those two cases, the only thing that the dealer was being required to submit was information regarding firearms that he had acquired, not firearms that he was disposing of. And on top of that, the requirement that he was not required, the dealer is not required, to submit the name of the person from whom he purchased the firearm or acquired the firearm. So we don't have any of the problems, for example, the registration
issue. The decisions, respectfully, were not written with that limitation implicit in the decision. The decisions seem to me fairly clear to say that you can get, pursuant to 5A, anything that you can be required to keep pursuant to 1A.
Well, I think...
I think it is totally unfair to suggest that the Fourth and Ninth Circuit has said other than that.
No.
There's no doubt that in each case the facts are slightly different, but that legal principle seems to be established in those circuits.
Well, the legal principle that we argue now that those two courts rejected was that the other provisions, particularly 923G3, which is the provision specifically requiring reporting of multiple sales of handguns, was not an issue in those cases, because those cases did not involve sending in information about dispositions of firearms. They only required acquisitions.
I don't know how you can read those cases to say other than the main point that's at issue here. That is, you can be required under 5 to, pursuant to a demand, to give what 1A requires you to keep.
You can, I think in those cases, the arguments, the statutory arguments that we're making here with regard to the reading the statute holistically, don't apply. Here, because the requirement is different, the statutory argument is different as well. And the main argument being the fact that 923G3 expressly requires the reporting of multiple sales of handguns, whereas the whole rest of the statute doesn't. It only refers to firearms, and you can discern from that that Congress specifically addressed the multiple sale issue and said we're only going to require that with regard to handguns, and allowing the government to say, well, we can find some power somewhere else when Congress has specifically said this is all we want,
I think is not construing
the statute.
Both of those decisions, and I don't feel like pulling it right in front of me now, reject the suggestion that 3A somehow limits 5.
They
in
did.
Anyway.
I don't disagree with that. They did, but we didn't have in that situation a requirement of reporting of multiple sales.
Doesn't matter. That comes from the 3A, and the courts were saying 3A has nothing to do with this question in a demand letter.
And in those cases, it didn't. In this case, it does, because we're talking about reporting multiple sales of long guns. Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate it.
Mr. Rod.
May it please the Court. What Mr. Gardner describes as a threshold argument really is resolved by the language of Section 923G5A. It refers to the agency's authority to demand by letter that a licensee submit all record information or such lesser record information that are required. It's required to be kept under this subchapter.
But it's required to be kept. That's the key to their argument.
Exactly right, Your Honor. And in footnote 5 and page 17 of their brief, they concede. And if you look at pages 34 and 36 to 38 of the joint appendix and compare the form that we're asking for here and the information and the record information that's required to be put on the forms 4473 that every firearms dealer has to keep when and by the way, complete immediately when they make the purchase, when they make the sale.
Let's get down to this is narrowed down a lot in my mind. Type of action, feeding sources, and that, days within, where is
not,
that required?
That's not required to be, that's not what we're asking for. That's the narrowing criteria that we're using for them to determine what lesser record information we're asking for. What they're complaining about, as I said, they concede that the information that we're actually demanding in...
You're not asking for type of action?
No. What we're asking for is caliber, model, serial number, certain information about purchasers, all of the, that which, if you do compare page 34 with pages 36 to 38 of the joint appendix, the two forms, you'll see page 34 is the form that we're asking through the demand letter that they submit. There's no information on there asking for the whether or not the gun at issue is semi-automatic and whether it can accept a detachable magazine. As the Western District of Texas, in upholding this very demand letter upheld in the 10-ring precision case noted, if you know the model number, that is required information to be kept, that is what's on the form on page 34, any firearms dealer, as they put it colloquially, worth his salt, is going to know what whether or not the narrowing criteria that we're using to determine whether you have to submit the form and complete the record information is triggered. But if you have any questions, by the way, this letter has been in place since August of 2011. The agency made clear, as we pointed out in our brief, that if you have any questions about this, whether or not the criteria, the narrowing criteria that we're using to trigger the record information that we're asking for be sent to us, contact us, the Firearms Technology Branch of the ATF. We provided a specific telephone number. Nothing in the record, and we are not aware of any flood of requests or confusion, because contrary to what Mr. Gardner suggests, if you know the model number, you are going to be able to determine whether or not the...
Okay, so that's what I was trying to understand. If every model number over 5,000, or that starts with a 5 and is 4 numbers, means it's a semi-automatic rifle. Is that the nature of the model number series in this industry?
Well, as I understand it, if you know the model name or number or whatever, relevant information about the model that you already have to submit, that you should be able to determine between the model and the manufacturer whether or not what you've got is not only a semi-automatic rifle, because we're not asking for information about all semi-automatic rifles, but also is it a semi-automatic rifle capable of accepting a detachable magazine?
Just follow this through. you say you're not asking for. They say the regulations don't require us to do more than say manufacturer, model number, serial number. And I don't know what type means. It could mean semi-automatic, but it could just mean firearm. What do you think it means?
I think it means rifle versus pistol or revolver.
Okay. So one of the arguments made is, for another reason, is that, you know, this is a narrowly tailored request. Well, I just need to be clear. If everybody in the industry knows that a model number that starts with 5 and has 4 numbers or 3 letters or something like that, you know it's a semi-automatic rifle, so that you don't have to turn over all your records and ATF can sort through them and figure out which are these rifles they're really interested in. You, as the licensee, can sift through these records and figure out what it is you have to report.
Right, and again, this has been in effect since August of 2001.
No, but the fact that nobody's challenged it doesn't mean anything. You know that, counsel.
This really is nothing. There is a reason why the Western District of Texas has had no problem, like the district court here, in sustaining this demand letter. This is really not an onerous requirement. And the relevant question here is, under Section 923 G5A, are we asking for record information required to be kept? That's what we're doing here. And that's all that's relevant for purposes of determining whether this is a valid exercise of the agency's broad demand letter authority.
I'm not sure I'm understanding your answer, Judge Rogers. Are you saying that the listing of the model number, from the listing of the model number, you can easily discern semi-automatic or not?
If you're a dealer in these firearms, you should be able to easily discern whether, if you've got the model number of the manufacturer, as the Western District of Texas noted, you ought to be able to readily determine whether or not what you've got is the kind of weapon, the sale of which, if you make multiple sales within a 5-day period, you're going to need to comply with this demand letter and submit information. That's what I'm saying. And
so I've not read this Western District Court, but that's the key opinion here to explain what's going on.
Well, it adopts similar reasoning to what the district court here did. I mean, it's up on appeal in the Fifth Circuit, but he noted, among other things, that any firearms dealer who worth his salt, as he put it, would know that if you've got model information and the manufacturer's information, both of which are required to be kept, that you ought to be able to determine. But again, if there were any uncertainties, the agency made clear that you should contact and can contact the firearms technology branch of the Bureau, and you can resolve any ambiguities or uncertainties about whether any particular model qualifies for this reporting
obligation.
Let me ask
you about the serial number. If Mr. Gardner is correct that there's some guns that qualify that don't have models, how many steps does it take from the serial number to get to the type of gun that has to be?
It's unclear. It's quite frankly, I'm not aware of any manufactured weapons that don't have model names to them, but I don't think it would be a particularly onerous thing to figure out. Again, you're the one handling these firearms for you to be able to figure out from the other information that you're required to keep, which weapon that we're talking about.
Is there a requirement, what type of record is required to be kept that the manufacturer produces, so that if you have a catalog of Smith & Wesson and you take the serial number and that tells you whether it qualifies or not? I mean, what records are these FFLs required to keep from the manufacturers themselves?
The manufacturers themselves are FFLs too, and they're not the subject of this demand letter. It only applies, again, a narrowing focus on dealers and pawnbrokers.
Right.
But the manufacturers have their own requirements whenever they transfer weapons.
I'm asking is, what record does a dealer have to keep that comes from the manufacturer?
That I'm not sure about,
okay.
Your Honor.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
In challenging this, have they offered any information in the record to show here's a category, or here are categories of semi-automatic, the types of weapons that you're looking for that don't have model numbers.
No, there's nothing that I'm aware of.
Because that's part of the thing that's bothering me here, that this is essentially an arbitrary and capricious type claim. It's their burden to show it. They're making an argument here that there are all these models where there's lots of confusion. I don't remember the record indicating any levels of confusion by virtue of here's X gun with no model number or one can't be. There's none of that's in the record.
Nothing that I'm aware of, Your Honor. Nothing. And again, with regard to his other points, as Judge Edwards suggested, the Fourth and Ninth Circuit really have rejected their broader challenges with regard to the statutory authority of the agency and the impact of other provisions of Title 18 on the demand letter authority. And if the court has no other questions, we'd...
Well, I've got one about the appropriations rider and the fact that this goes to the tracing center and there's not supposed to be a national registry. What do you say about that?
We'd say look at 923G3. And what the Fourth Circuit had to say about that in the RSM case in particular, there a much broader reporting obligation occurs with regard to multiple sales of pistols and revolvers nationwide, all pistols and revolvers that are sold, multiple sales of those here. And as to that reporting obligation, Judge Wilkinson for the Fourth Circuit in the RSM case made clear that was just a small amount of information that didn't trigger the applicability of the appropriations provision. Moreover, a 1996 GAO report separately has concluded that that reporting obligation is consistent with and doesn't violate the appropriations restriction. So here, the much narrower restriction that occurs with regard to small subset, just four states, the states bordering Mexico, with regard to a very small set of their multiple sales of rifles. Not all rifles, only semi-automatic high caliber rifles greater than 22 that can accept a detachable magazine.
How did Mexico get in here? What's the explanation for their inclusion? The other three states are obvious.
Yeah, well, first of all, it borders Mexico. Second of all, it was for a nearly four-year period from 2006 to 2010 before the agency, leading up to the agency's adoption of the demand letter, was among the top four, was the fourth highest source location for firearms uncovered in Mexico that were successfully traced. So there was eminent basis in the administrative record for the agency to include New Mexico as well.
So these four states represent only 7%?
7% of all firearms licenses that would include all categories, and 16% of dealers and pawnbrokers nationwide.
If you know, if it's in the record, what are the big states, if those four only comprise 7%?
Oh, you mean the big states? No, that's 7% of just, of you mean of in terms of number of licensees?
Yeah. Yes.
I'm not sure. If no further questions, we just ask that the judgment be affirmed.
Thank you. Does Mr. Gardner have any time left? All right, why don't you take 2 minutes?
Just a response to the argument that a dealer can ask the agency whether a particular firearm is covered or not. What we're talking about here is the statute, and the agency has only that authority which the statute gives it, which Congress has given. And there's nothing in the statute, nothing in the regulations, which says that that a dealer is required to go to the agency if he has a question. The law is supposed to be what governs him, what's in the statute and what's in the regulations. And the fact that the agency is saying, well, you know, it's not in the regulations, just come ask us, is no response. And you had the question.
It's not in the regulation. They're saying, we don't think this is confusing, but if it is confusing, certainly ask us. And then they're arguing to us No one seems to be confused, which fits with what we thought, because it doesn't seem to be confusing to us.
And what's happening, Your Honor, as a practical matter, is that the licensees, rather than risk having their licenses revoked because they are not providing the reports, are doing extra duty to try to figure out whether a particular firearm is, in fact, covered by the demand letter. They're going outside the requirements that Congress and the regulations have imposed on them. And that's really the fundamental issue here, is whether the agency on its own can impose requirements that Congress hasn't chosen to impose and impose requirements that the agency through the normal regulatory process has not chosen to impose. They're going, essentially, you could argue that they're going outside the requirements of the Administrative Procedure Act by imposing duties which are not required by law.
I want to confirm what I asked the government, because it is certainly my understanding. There's no record evidence in this case from you indicating this confusion about model number and what a model number means, right?
There's no evidence in the record concerning that. That's correct, Your Honor, because we didn't think it was necessary to put that in, because our view is that licensees are governed by the law and not governed by what the agency wants them to do. And there's nothing in the law that requires them to do what the agency...
The law in this case includes the regulation.
That it does. And there's nothing in the regulations that requires this. And the government said, but as I said before, the model is not required.
That's what I'm asking you. That's my question. There's nothing in the record to prove that point.
To prove the point that model information is not recorded? Yes, that's...
No, that it's somehow confusing and it can't get
no.
you to what
the... No, there's nothing in the record, because there's no requirement under the regulations specifically say that you don't have to record model information. So there wasn't any need to put any information in the record about whether model information would be helpful, because it's not required.
And I thought it says information is required by the form. And
right.
The form has model number.
It does, but in many cases it's going to be blank, because
right.
the regulations don't require a manufacturer to assign a model. And one last point, if I might, in response to your question, Your Honor, I believe, or Judge Henderson's question about what manufacturers' records are. Manufacturers are required to keep essentially the same records. They're not required to record anywhere. This is in the regulations. They're also not required to record the type of action or the type of ammunition feeding source.
Well, my question was this, and I guess you've answered it. What manufacturer's information is the dealer required to keep? And you're saying, regardless of what it is, it doesn't contain this information.
That's correct.
All right.
It's right in the regulations, as we reproduce it on page 8 of the reply brief.
All right.
Thank you, Judge.
All right.